like to thank all of our representatives for the governor. We're going to now move to our candidates for the House of Representatives. We're going to begin with District 4, Don Card. Thank you very much, Mr. Card. Representing District 5, the current Congressman J.D. Hayworth, the Republican Party, will be speaking next. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you to the congregation at Temple Emmanuel and to interested voters. Thank you for taking time out on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. I would only offer a polite exception in one category to Mayor Gordon. While it is true that everyone running for public office, it takes a certain amount of audacity to do that, and we've had examples of that earlier in our forum this afternoon, the real encouragement and acknowledgement should go to you. So give yourselves a hand for taking time out for a couple of hours this afternoon. Our first president, George Washington, offered sage advice. We must see the world as it is, said Washington, not merely as we wish it to be. And at no time is that more true than early in the 21st century. Another piece of advice from across the generations and across Arizona politics, offered to me by a one-time congressional leader, one of my predecessors, and at the end of his life, my constituent, John Rose, used to say, "Oh, buddy, politics is the art of the possible." No one should abandon vision or philosophy, but in the final analysis, the measure of effectiveness for a member of Congress is his or her ability to get things done. And you have honored me with a chance to serve in the Congress of the United States now for 6 terms. And with that honor, you and I have had a chance to get a lot of things done. First of all, as the only Arizona representative in history to serve on the Ways and Means Committee, the committee that has jurisdiction over so many key portions of American life, I understand full well that our government functions better when individual citizens have more of their own money to save, spend, and invest instead of sending it to Washington, D.C. It's not a partisan point of view, whether it was Jack Kennedy in the 1960s or more recently Ronald Reagan in the 1980s or just a few years ago President Bush working with those of us on the Ways and Means Committee when we reduced taxes across the board that fueled the engines of economic opportunity, even the post-9/11 age. And now we have low unemployment, and we have people going back to work. And in fact, forecasts on the deficit have been reduced because we continue to grow. And I likewise understand the cautionary observation of a jurist who said, "The power to tax is the power to destroy." But I believe a corollary is true. I believe the power to reduce taxation is the power to employ. And I believe the power to reduce taxation and embrace new technologies is vital in the 21st century. Case in point, our solar energy tax credits, which I offered, now a part of the energy bill, actually encouraging people at home and in their businesses to invest in solar power. It's important. It should be done. And I have moved forward on a bipartisan basis to actually extend that credit. Not for Main Street, not for Wall Street, not really for Main Street, but for your street, so that you have the opportunity to take advantage of this, to embrace this new technology. The Ways and Means Committee offers more opportunities. A few years ago, a lot of our seniors were faced with a terrible choice. Should they pay for the medicine they need, or should they pay to put food on the table? That's why I was pleased to be a part of the Congress that offered meaningful Medicare reform that includes prescription drugs for every senior, so that no senior will have to choose between food and medicine. I also believe in one of the true nonpartisan triumphs of our time in office, welfare reform that requires work. Because at the end of the day, the most effective social program is a good job. And that's what we've been able to do. It was interesting to hear the educational dissertation earlier. It is true, our Constitution offers no clear articulation of the role of the federal government in terms of education, but subsequent documents and subsequent events offer us a clear example of what we should do. The Northwest Ordinance talks about the role of government and education. And more importantly, as our world began to get more and more complicated, President Dwight Eisenhower, the year prior to my birth, championed the National Defense and Education Act to make sure that we would not have a drain of scientists and those involved in technology to meet the challenges of the Cold War. Eisenhower's foresight was absolutely correct. And just as Mark Twain pointed out, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. I've been pleased to make sure, not only in terms of K-12, with no child left behind, that encourages educational accountability and standards, but right down the street here at Arizona State University, which geographical presence is right in the heart of the 5th Congressional District. I've been pleased to work along with that major research institution to make sure that investments are made at the federal level to the tune last year of over $36 million to deal with the world as we confront it today. I differ with some of my conservative brethren on the concept of wise investment. I do believe that as the Phoenix area has become the 5th largest metropolitan area in the country, we cannot avoid investments in infrastructure and transportation. That's why I have championed, to the chagrin of some of my conservative brethren, mass transit and alternative forms of transit, again to be responsible and move forward into the future. That's why I worked hard in terms of making sure that the TGen project could be established here in Arizona. And that is why, not with a specific act of Congress, but with the actions of one individual member of Congress, I personally intervened with the director of the National Institutes of Health to bring a landmark study for autism here to our Valley of the Sun, rather than seeing it done in a foreign, the foreign Republic of Iceland. One other important note that somehow was omitted from the newspapers, and I think it typifies the work I've been able to do. The Child Health USA people came to me and they said, Congressman, we've about got the Adam Walsh bill through. Your amendment offered to Sue Kelly of New York for a national child registry is an important part of that bill so we can track child molesters and sexual abusers from state to state. The Senate passed the bill, but some of your leadership is sitting on it. They object to a study. I went to the floor of the Congress, went to the committee chairman of jurisdiction, and far from the roar of the grease paint, the smell of the crowd said, look, this is important. I understand the pitfalls of studies being paralysis by analysis, but we do need a way to have a gauge of the effectiveness of this. Please lift your objection. The objection was lifted. The study was agreed to, and the president signed that bill into law. Making things work. That's what I've been able to do in the Congress of the United States. In closing, because I see our dear moderator is concerned about the time, and I guess, unfortunately, I have lived up to my reputation for verbosity, but we've been able to do a lot of things. I understand this. Undergirding all of the accomplishments, the most basic an elemental responsibility of government is protection of its citizens. It has been said earlier today here, border security is national security. We've just come through the monsoon season. It's a very realistic approach. When you've got a hole in the roof, patch the hole. Then worry about the interior water damage. Yes, we should move forward with enforcement first. And in closing, suffer no delusions. You can see it if you travel around the world. Perhaps you've been to Leonardo da Vinci Airport outside Rome, where the Europeans are free to line up and travel. but where Americans and Israelis are asked to move around the corner to another corridor for security. That serves as a metaphor for what is transpiring in our world. The Islamo-fascists who would engage in a maricide and kill all of us, regardless of race, religion, color, or creed, simply because we are Americans, have made it very clear. They've made it clear that they consider Israel our little brother and that we are the great Satan. Ladies and gentlemen, as long as I am honored to serve in the Congress of the United States, I understand full well the special relationship that exists between the United States and Israel. I believe Israel is a strong ally. The United States will remain a strong ally and friend. And together with others in this world, we can make this world safe from the scourge of Islamofascism. I ask for your support. I look forward to our discussion this afternoon. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you, Congressman Hayward. Our last representative, representing District 5, former State Senator Harry Mitchell, representing the Democratic Party.
So much. And I want to first of all thank Lydia Guppy for organizing this, Rabbi Strauss, and the congregation of Temple Emmanuel. And I want to thank all of you for giving me the honor to speak today, to listen to you today, and hopefully answer some of your questions. Let me just tell you a little about myself. I first got my interest in politics because my granddad was in the state legislature when I was a young kid, and he lived a block away. He would get me out of school, and I would spend the day at the legislature. Then I got old enough to drive, and I put up his signs, and he got to the point where he couldn't see to drive at night, so I would drive him to his meetings. Then I just majored in what I liked and what I had an interest in, which was government. To make a long story short, after I graduated from ASU, I went back to Tempe High School, where I graduated from. I taught there for 28 years. I've been in a lot of elections. My grandfather's, mine, and more recently even, my son, who happens to be the vice mayor, or not vice mayor, a councilman, at the city of Tempe. But I think that this election is the most important election that I've ever participated in. One of the things that I think has been very important is that as a teacher of government, and I see this all the time, are all the stereotypes people have about people in government, politicians, and all these bad stereotypes. And one of the things that I've tried to do, because I got this from my grandfather, the importance of the public service, the honorable profession of politics. And I always tried, through the 28 years that I taught and passed on to my son, how important it was to be in a public service and to do that with honor. And I always feel very bad when some people kind of live up, some politicians, to the stereotypes that people have. And I've tried very hard through my career to try to undo those politicians. I believe that Washington has the wrong priorities. And I believe that it's time for new leadership. Washington's priorities are not Arizona's priorities. And I think that we need a change. And I want to talk just about three issues. There are many more than that. But just to give you a little sense of where I'm coming from and give time also for some questions later. We've heard today already the talk about illegal immigration. And I believe that it's time for real leadership when it comes to illegal immigration. You know, in the 12 years that my opponent has been in Congress, illegal immigration has gotten worse. In 2000, there were 8,000 illegal immigrants. Today, there are 12 million. Excuse me, there are 8 million in 2000. Today, there are 12 million. and listening to Lynn Mussel, what he just said, every day 5,000 illegals come to this state illegally. That is nothing more than a failure on the part of the federal government. It shouldn't even have been a state issue. This is a flat-out failure on the federal government to protect our borders, and I think that is an important thing to keep in mind. The federal government has not done its job in securing borders. I support Senator McCain's plan, and I support a tough, bipartisan, realistic solution to ending illegal immigration. We need to beef up our border patrol. And in places, we need to have a fence in urban areas. And we certainly need to install better technology. We need employer sanctions for those who knowingly violate the law. And we need a temporary worker program. It was just mentioned earlier about full employment. The paper the other day said that unemployment in Maricopa County was 3%. In the state of Arizona, 3.6%. That is full employment. Talk to any economist. I oppose amnesty completely, but I believe that we need a guest worker program. If our economy is to grow, as it should, we need a guest worker program. My opponent's plan, I think, is very unrealistic and wrong for Arizona. He advocates making every illegal immigrant a felon and then deporting them. He believes, and he has said in his book, in ending immigration, legal immigration for Mexico for 3 years. And he's even suggested using untrained bounty hunters as an authority to go into neighborhoods through bail bondsmen to capture illegal immigrants for deportation. A few weeks ago, I had a roundtable with Republican business leaders talking about immigration. And we talked about all the different plans that were put forth. And to a person, in particular, I heard this from the Arizona General Contractors Association, said that if these plans went into effect, it would stifle the economy in Arizona. I believe, and the reason I held that conference, or that roundtable, in a bipartisan approach, we need a bipartisan solution to immigration, and I'll go to Washington to pass a solution that I think secures our borders and strengthens our economy. There's another thing that I think is very important that we hear a lot of talk about, and that is strengthen our economy. Cut government spending and balance the federal budget. My friends, I think you know that government spending is out of control. We're seeing wasteful projects come out of Congress, things like the $250 million bridge to nowhere, record tax giveaways to oil and gas companies. We have an inflated and wasteful no-bid government contracts going on to companies like Halliburton. I want you to also realize, when we talk about what's been going on in the past, my opponent went to Congress and he promised a balanced budget. You even see it on his signs. But what he's given us, of course, is nothing but rhetoric. He has voted to increase the national debt ceiling to nearly $9 trillion. That's $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. I believe in fiscal responsibility, and I have a record of balancing budgets. I've balanced 31 budgets at the city and state level. And that isn't just by raising taxes. It's tough choices. Sometimes you have to cut programs. And when it comes to cutting, we need to do that if we're going to cut spending. When Governor Napolitano came to office, I was in the state senate. We had a record deficit of $1 billion. And it wasn't just me, but we worked together in a bipartisan approach and turned that deficit into a surplus. And we did it without raising taxes and without cutting education. And the last thing I just want to mention is that I'm a big believer in science. I think it has the potential to do incredible things. And that's why I'm so much a supporter in the power and the importance of stem cell research. I was very disappointed that the president used his first and only veto of his presidency to veto a very important piece of legislation like stem cell legislation. Not only are we here in the United States denied important advances and discoveries that could relieve the suffering of millions. What we are doing is we are pushing research overseas. We are pushing research in the international market. Just a few days after the President vetoed the stem cell legislation, the European Union increased its budget for that research, and China did the very same. If we keep going down this path, voting against scientific research, Americans will no longer be at the forefront when it comes to receiving the most advanced medical care in the world. Now, as I said earlier, this election is about change. And elections are a chance for job reviews. How's a person doing? And should they be retained, or is it time to replace? And I believe that this election is a time for change. A change in direction and a change in priorities. I believe in spending money for medical research that could relieve the suffering of millions. GD opposes spending money for stem cell research. I believe in a woman's right to choose. GD believes that a victim of rape and incest should have no choice. I believe in investing in alternative energy. GD believes in giving millions of dollars in tax breaks to big oil companies. I believe in safe, secure borders with a guest worker program. GD believes in making felons of all 12 million illegals and shipping them out. I believe in fiscal responsibility and a balanced budget. GD continually votes for unbalanced budgets that increase our national debt. I believe that Congress has the responsibility of oversight by asking tough questions about Iraq, about no-bid contracts, about waste and mismanagement. GD has been a rubber stamp. If you're happy with the way things are going in Washington, my opponent has made it clear that that's what you'll get from him. But if you believe, as I do, that we can do better, that we deserve better, that our nation needs a new direction, then I ask for your support and your vote. Thank you very much.
It's an unenviable position, believe me, trying to get them to limit their time. Our last speaker is also a candidate in District 5, representing the Libertarian Party, Warren Severin.
Oh, come on, that wasn't as loud as for Harry. Gee, I feel left out. Alright, so I'm Warren Severin. I'm a libertarian. And, you know, you've heard a few libertarians here. You understand a few things about us. You know, we're for personal responsibility. Okay, we'll try it like this. Libertarians, we're about personal responsibility, personal freedom, financial independence, free markets, strong national defense, minimal intervention in the internal affairs of others. We're the live and let live party. To get government out of our pockets and out of our bedrooms, party. We just heard a lot about spending. Somebody told me a little while ago, you know the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? Democrats take the money right out of your pocket, the Republicans put it on your charge card. You know, hey, you don't believe that? Think about it. We'll come to some issues on the budget here in a bit. I'm not going to try to tell you my life story. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I live in Albuquerque. I have a wife, three grown kids, two beautiful grandkids, two dogs. I'm an engineer turned marketing manager. Been in Arizona about 10 years. If you know more than that, see me later. Now some things that are really important. One of the beauties of running as a third-party candidate is that I don't have any special interests out there. There are no big power groups, no big contributors. And, you know, probably my chances of being elected are, you know, something like that, but not like that. But the thing is that I get to stand here and give a libertarian perspective, but tell the truth as I see it without a lot of external influence. And so I'm going to say some things that aren't the same as you know, the right to left. And part of the reason I'm running is that I really hate the hype and the spin and the demagoguery that I hear, the shrill voices on the right and the left. And I really think there's an intermediate solution, a solution that embodies a lot of the freedom principles of libertarian, but embodies the both, the best of both the right and the left. The freedom, personally, that Democrats would give you, the freedom financially, that Republicans would give you, but don't deliver. Both sides, we've got libertarians. Live and let live. Middle East, now start saying some things that a Republican or Democrat couldn't say. This war in Iraq is a disaster. We were brought into this from the inception of the Bush administration with lies, deceit. There's a trail of paper and speeches going back to when George was elected, inaugurated. And if you go back and read before that, you'll find the neocons had the whole thing planned since 1998. And so, we've wasted 3,000 American lives, somewhere around 100,000 Iraqi lives. How many others? We spent hundreds of billions of dollars. And what are we there? We're still losing lives. We've not won the country. We've not installed a democracy that controls anything other than a little green zone in Baghdad. The country is degenerated in civil war, sectarian civil war. One could argue that would have done that with or without the fall of, or taking over with the fall of Saddam would have done that. But what is our continued presence doing there? Is in a civil war now, is going to get worse if we leave? Most people don't think so. No. I think the time is now to declare victory and redirect the joint. I'm serious. That's what everybody does. You say, please, declare victory. Hey, we won. We did the thing. We got Saddam out. Now, let's get the troops out. All right. Now, I'm not a military strategist. I'm not going to say it'll be 6 months, it'll be 12 or 18. What I'm going to say is that the Joint Chiefs need to be redirected. The Joint Chiefs need to be told, it's not the plan it is now where you're out there, you know, see this thing at the bitter end, we don't know what that is. The new plan is this. You create a plan, you execute a plan to bring our troops home with the minimal loss of American lives and Iraqi lives. Let's talk about some other things people don't like to talk about. Immigration. Here. You know what? We've heard a lot of shrill voices about immigration. I'm here to tell you the whole issue is overblown. Illegal immigration. Look, we're all here from immigrant stock. Every god one of us. Immigrants are a necessary part of our economy. They have been for over 200 years. They fill the needs of our farms, our factories, our universities. So what is all this deal about this xenophobia? It's coming from somewhere. We have a lot of illegal immigrants right now. Well, okay, so what's the problem with illegal immigrants? Well, maybe they're getting some government services that, you know, other people are paying for and they're not paying for. Might that be the problem? Well, a libertarian might just say, well, you know, let's not have the government services, but let's just say, okay, real world, we got them. What do we do about it? Well, let's take those 12 million people who are here. Nobody really knows what that number is. But let's take those 12 million and anybody else who wants to come that can meet the needs of our industry, our farms, our research and development departments, all the scale, and have a real guest worker program. Not one that takes years and years to get through with a very low probability, but one that somebody wants to come and work in the U.S. for a specified period of time, come and do it, and pay into the system for the social services you use. And I think that problem goes away with just a real good guest worker program and some strengthening of the border to the point that we say, yes, it's easier to be here through the guest worker program than just jump the fence. And how much we have to fill the fence or reinforce that border is strictly determined by how good a guest worker program is. Keep in mind the long-term goal, which is that Mexico's economy has got to improve. you know, I came from upstate New York for many years, and for many years the border was just open. You know, a lot of smaller roads just drive across, you know, come back to Ontario, welcome to the U.S., nobody around. I don't think it'll take, you know, it won't be very soon, but Mexico's got to get to that point. That's the long-term goal. How am I doing for time? 1 minute. Let's get one more thing people need to hear. Oh, well, of course, the other interesting thing about immigration, people say, oh, well, it's a national security issue. Well, you know what? We're talking two different things. We got 2,000 miles of border with Mexico. We got another 5,000 miles of border with Canada. Let me tell you, you can't keep out a terrorist who's bent on bringing destruction, you know, a major event in the United States. Isn't going to work. We're talking about the U.S. military here. These are the same guys who couldn't secure 10 miles of road from Baghdad and the airport with the full resources of the U.S. Army. Okay, 7,000 miles? Okay, scowl at me. Really, the issue of terrorism is a whole other one. I don't have that much time to maybe the questions will be there, but I'll say this, that issue in the broad scope is solved by fixing the United States' relationship with the rest of the world, not by building fences. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Severn. Okay, let's move on, because we are getting pressed for time here, to the questions. These are questions from our committee, and we're going to begin with the representatives for governor and Mr. Mansour, candidate, and Mr. Hess. The first question for our gubernatorial candidates deals with promoting business growth. And the question is this: keeping Arizona friendly towards business is essential for growing our economy. How do you propose to encourage growth in our economy while providing opportunities such as strong wages and health care and protections, job security and training for Arizona workers? And Ms. Munsell, would you like to begin?
Sure. So I believe very strongly in freedom. I believe that the best opportunities for business, for the economy, are a low tax, low regulatory environment. That is what provides opportunity to all businesses, to small businesses, large businesses, high tech, low tech, whatever the business is. The opportunity will be great to produce the jobs that are needed, to produce the opportunities for our people in the state of Arizona. And I am a Reagan conservative. Those are the values that I believe in. I think they've led to the economy that we have. That's the envy of the world. It's the marketplace. It's freedom. It's opportunity. And a government that grew, as our government did under this governor, in the last year by 20% is growing much faster than the rate of inflation and the rate of population growth. I think we should be growing the private economy, not growing government. Thank you.
Imagine me agreeing with Len. Because in large part I have to. He's right. My plan is actually to lower our corporate structure to a 4% flat, no deductions tax, so that everybody knows what they're paying now. And so the government and its regulation does not determine where and how it grows. The market itself does. And we all have to realize that where there's a need, it will be filled. It creates a market vacuum. He's absolutely right. By getting government out of the way, primarily, is the only way to grow our government, unless you want to show special favor. I know a lot of the Democrats like to say, ooh, we're going to stimulate some business growth. What's the first thing they do? They're going to offer them a tax rebate. Of course, how about a tax rebate for everyone? I think that's the only way that we're going to grow Arizona's economy. It is the only proven way, and it is a sure way. And it's going to work regardless of what Janet does in office by trying to hinder it in some areas and trying to encourage it in others. I'll encourage it where it's needed by keeping my hands off. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the governor has a proven track record
proven track record is that she's supported business, worked with the business community leaders to find out what they need to grow here, and also what business leaders throughout the country need to invest here. That's first and foremost a public-private partnership of getting everybody to work together, invest in education, so the workforce here is highly trained and knowledgeable, so that businesses will continue to come here and invest in the future. Number two, that this state and these cities that are within the state are investing in infrastructure, so businesses will make long-term capital investments, so that the infrastructure is in place there for all of us to enjoy and prosper, from parks, by the way, to roads. Also, thirdly, is to make sure that we are investing as a private sector, focused as a public sector, on those jobs that pay well. Not $7-an-hour jobs that result in healthcare benefits coming on the UNI's taxpayers, but knowledge economy jobs, high-paying jobs. That's why Google is here in Tempe, not Phoenix, but here. And Yahoo, and iPower. That's why the governor fought together with a lot of the congressional delegation and leaders that are behind me, both Senator Mitchell and Representative Hayworth, to keep the Air Force Base here, a major economic engine for this state in terms of jobs. That's why the governor helped support the convention center investment that every city and every private sector business throughout the country and state and chamber supported, because we would bring tourist dollars here, new tax dollars to help invest in the future. That's what this governor has done as a proven record. That's what this governor will continue to do. And, by the way, have helped lead through a lot of discussions without, at the cost of local government's public safety, sign in the law, a tax package of reduced property tax and income tax that resulted in that $370 million reduction, with a lot of leadership from both parties.
Although I failed to mention it, thank you for your brevity in your responses. We are hoping to keep them to 2 or 3 minutes maximum. The next question for the gubernatorial candidates deals with educational funding. Education plays a vital role in preparing future generations to be an integral part in maintaining America's economy and assuming the mantle of political leadership. Polls indicate the importance Arizona's place on education, yet statistics consistently show that our state ranks in the bottom third on most indicators, including teen dropout rate, low test scores, comparative funding per student. Arizona has taken measures to address some of these problems by encouraging school choice, expansion of charter schools, and the passing of tuition tax credits. My question to you is, what role do you believe the state plays in funding education? What are your opinions on education vouchers for private and parochial schools? Do you favor corporate tuition tax credits?
Let's see, we started with Mr. Hunsell, so how about if we go with you, Mayor Gordon?
Again, governor with a proven track record in education, having been a teacher, having been a school board member and a father of a 7-year-old, I know the importance of education. This is a governor, first and foremost, that has looked at all levels of education and all types of education, fought to make sure that the universities and the community colleges budgets not be cut when it was proposed to be cut over the years. And in fact, not only fought not to have it cut, but to increase. The same entities that Representative Hayworth was referring to in terms of the research investment that he supported, that's what the governor led here against significant opposition. At the high school and elementary level, certainly the first historic teacher pay raise in over a decade. Let's be honest, teachers that are making $25,000 to $28,000 a year need a fair wage so that they can survive and they will stay in education. This is the first time. It's $100 million, and we all read a pay package. We all read about the opposition to that. We're also, in terms of investing in high technology, the computers, the research, That's the programs that the governor has pushed in education to do. She created the P20 Council, preschool to 20th. It's all integrated now. I have the honor and privilege sitting on that board with so many different leaders, business and private and public. She's worked with me in terms of alternative high school sizes, the public safety high school, the science high school, also the nursing high school that's proposed, and certainly the medical school in terms of her support and fight to expand from U of A to downtown Phoenix to make sure that we train future doctors and nurses. Higher education has been her mantra and her lead. She has a proven record in education. Don't forget about that magic trick about keeping your eyes off the ball. This is a governor that believes in education and is fighting for it, and you know it and I know it. Without disrespecting the mayor, I would have to say I would refer to his earlier comments where you can make anything look like anything. It's true. She has spent an enormous amount of money, and I would argue it has been wasted. We're last in the nation. Throwing money at the problem is not correcting the problem. And I promise you, as governor, I will keep my focus on the progress of each and every individual student, and I will not be concerned like Janet has been in preserving the institutional process of education. In talking with the AEA yesterday, it was incredible because I saw her speech, and it was scary. Spend more money. Make them think you're doing something. It's not. Our children are too important to play these political games with. We've got to encourage education on a competitive basis. I do support vouchers until we can eliminate the income tax so that people can afford to send their kids to the educational institution of their own. I do believe that government education is a welfare system, for crying out loud. If you have the means to send your child to a school that actually produces a good product, as demonstrated by what they do when they get out, and you don't, I would dare say it's very close to child abuse. To dog them with a knowingly failed education is one of the worst things we as parents could do. I know I would never even consider such a thing, and I hope that you'll rethink it. It's something there just as an alternative. And it should be there. When we eliminate things like property tax, I mean, come on, a nation founded on respect for individual property ownership rights, we have a property tax or a death tax where your government has a vested financial interest in your personal demise. I think starting to make sense, we eliminate the income tax, control the corporate income tax to the lowest possible level so that we can compete in a real market like the states around us, and we will have an education system that will be stimulated not only by individuals and philanthropists who are now discouraged from starting things. They have to go out of state, like Kevin Johnson or Otha, who has gone to Sacramento and has started an incredible program. I will bring in people with a demonstrated track record. Oh yes, Janet does have a proven track record. 44th to 50th in the nation, and I think it's deplorable that we would say that somehow is a good thing. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate what Larry just said. Actually, it's very accurate. And to hear this described, this proven track record, as something to be proud of is amazing to me. Now, when we started off the debate a few weeks ago, the governor came out with these ads that, you know, morning in Arizona, everything was wonderful, rosy. And, you know, I'm a native Arizona. I love the state. It's a great state to live in. But we can't ignore the fact that there are some problems that have become worse on the watch of this governor. And education is certainly one of those areas. Now, after coming out with rolling that ad out about how wonderful everything was in every way, she was quoted the day after the primary election saying that this election is not about the last 3.5 years, it's about the next 4.5. So I'm not sure, is she running on her record or is she running away from her record? Those are some of the issues that we're going to flesh out here. We've heard on several issues so far from the mayor. I appreciate the mayor. He's a good man. I'm looking forward to working with him when I'm governor. But we start off with this issue of the National Guard. We've been wondering why was she against it, and now she takes credit for the idea. And I think we got our answer here today. It sounded familiar to me to something we heard 2 years ago. She was apparently against putting the National Guard on the border until she decided she was in favor of putting the National Guard on the border. We hear the area of taxes. We heard the mayor take credit for her as a tax-cutting governor. And yet the truth of it is, and you can talk to any number of legislators, and this was reported in the media at the time, she opposed every single effort to cut taxes. She opposed the business tax cuts. She opposed property tax cuts. She opposed income tax cuts. And yet now she's taking credit for them because in the art of political compromise, she had to concede to some tax relief for the families of Arizona in exchange for more spending. And when you heard the issue discussed of how to improve the economy, all of the proposals were more spending. It was, we're going to spend here, we're going to invest here, we're going to invest here. That is not what the people of Arizona want to hear. The same thing with respect to education. Continuing to throw money at the same old system is a concern about protecting the status quo, protecting the institutions of education, rather than doing what is in the best interest of the children of the state of Arizona. And when we look and we evaluate around the country, where you inject more choice into the system, when you give parents more freedom and more opportunity, and you use the resources of the state, which according to our Arizona Constitution have to be put in play on behalf of the education of our kids, when you use those resources and allow those dollars to follow the child to whatever the parents believe is the best schooling environment for the children, education improves across the board, and it improves in the public education system. And we have a governor who has stood against every effort to expand parental choice, again conceding at the end in a compromise to allow a little bit of school choice to occur. But there's a reason why we have waiting lines to get into charter schools in Arizona. It's because this governor has slowed down the process of allowing parents more choice in education. Thank you.
Our next two questions are for candidates running for House of Representatives. The first question deals with the issue of immigration. Recent polls have indicated that immigration, both legal and illegal, is one of the top issues for most American voters. Most Americans agree that the immigration system is not working well and needs to be reformed. The debate centers on whether we should emphasize security first or establish a comprehensive approach. In addition, what are our responsibilities in providing services, such as education and access to health care, to those who are here illegally? What are your views on this matter? If elected, what legislation would you work for concerning these issues? Congressman Hayward, would you mind?
Thank you very much. Heard a lot of different perspectives on this, but the fact remains that we cannot undo what transpired on September 11th. And if it was not brought home to us as a people that border security is national security, then we will continue to have problems. I believe in an enforcement-first approach. Because, as I pointed out earlier, Mark Twain was right. History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Look 20 years ago, when we offered the last amnesty, what transpired? Massive fraud and more illegals coming in, utilizing fraud and loopholes in the system. Look, first things first, secure the borders and enforce the law. And despite the characterization of being a rubber stamp, I think you've seen adequate evidence that even with the President of the United States, I have profoundly but politely pointed out my differences. You don't put the cart before the horse. You enforce the laws first. We should make English our official language. We should also to actually enforce sanctions on those employers who knowingly hire illegals. And we're not polite but profound exception with my Democratic opponent. I do not believe the right approach
is to take your Social Security and give it to illegal aliens. That's the wrong thing. Because some on my side of the aisle said this rhetorical straw man. Well, certainly, Congressman, you're not saying we should deport 12 million plus at once. Of course not. But guess what happens when the laws are enforced? Guess what happens when loopholes are closed? People will leave of their own volition. It actually happened in terms of welfare reform when the word went out on the street that there would be time limits to welfare benefits. People went out and applied for jobs. When you enforce the law, that is the most effective way to get things done. And I clearly and unapologetically will maintain that the best thing for us to do is enforcement first. Settle these questions of border security and national security, and then move to other questions involving our country.
Thank you very much. The plan that I support is one that certainly doesn't take Social Security money away. I've never heard of such a thing because you're in favor of a comprehensive immigration plan that you're taking Social Security away. That's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard because I'm opposed to that too. I'm opposed to taking Social Security away. Let me also say, I do support a comprehensive plan, the very one put forth by Senator McCain, co-sponsored by Congressman Flake, and co-sponsored by Congressman Colby. It's a broad approach, a realistic approach, because it also deals with border security first. The President's plan, along with Senator McCain's plan, which I might add is opposed by J.D., he is opposed to all of those plans that have been put forth and any plan that's been voted on in Congress. But let me tell you, I believe that we have to secure the borders first. If we're going to be a sovereign nation, we need to know who's coming in over our borders. We need to secure the borders. But at the same time, because according to Senator McCain, it will take 18 to 24 months before you get a guest worker program up and running. It'll take 18 to 24 months to get a verifiable program in effect. So why would you wait, do nothing but border, and then wait in order to do the guest worker program? As I said, it's been 12 years. This isn't a new issue. The problem has gotten worse, not better. It's great to talk about it, but I think it's time for results.
Well, you've probably heard enough of my opinions before. I tend to disagree with both of my opponents here. Just let me say this about the issue of Social Security, though. Most illegal immigrants are here for about 4 years. They come here to make some money. They go back home, open their shop, whatever the heck it was. That's statistical reality. So Social Security is really a non-issue for them. Didn't come here to retire. All right. So what does that mean? We also have an awful lot, very high percentage of illegals out here with false documentation. Bogus Social Security numbers or made up fictitious, just want to make one up out of a hat to give your employer. I've heard arguments that the actual net income to Social Security fund is greater than outgo as regards to illegal immigrants. Think about it. As far as the other issues of securing our border, I don't think, you know, either of my opponents is dealing with reality in this measure. The full resources of the U.S. Armed Forces cannot secure that border at more money than we have. Okay. So it's got to be a guest worker program that takes the brunt of that burden with a minimal securing of the border such that it's hard enough to get in and cheaper out if you use the guest worker program. Thank you.
Many years ago, I wrote the President of the United States and told him to shut down the border because of a particular problem that was occurring. Now we see down in Mexico right now, they're basically at civil war. All right? So we have warnings from the State Department not to go to Mexico. And it's a big problem. You have drug cartels lining up our borders right now. The problem is, we have guys on this side who are aiding them. So we have to find out who aids our enemy. Alright, and everybody knows that there's a big problem going on. And everybody's like, oh, well, how do we handle it? It's so complex. Yeah, it is complex, especially when you have the Council of Foreign Relations trying to make a combination of Canada, the United States, and Mexico as one. Well, now, who's on this Council of Foreign Relations board? Well, you have the La Raza people there. Obviously, La Raza has the intentions of bringing everybody up here with the aid of Vincent Fox. Now, obviously, they just shuffled to somebody's new president there. They're still trying to figure it out down there. And basically, what you have is you have a lot of people here that are willing to deal with the other side. Now you're going to have this immigration problem here, and you're not going to be able to stop it. So putting a fence down there is the minimal you can do. Putting armed men down there is also the minimum. Investigation of why this is going on would be the maximum. Do we have any investigations going on? I've been investigating aerospace criminal activity for 20-some years now. Alright, and you know how many investigators they have out there for these people? Does anybody know? Does anybody actually know how many, out of all the whistleblowers out there in America, do you know how many attorneys they actually give to those whistleblowers who are trying to protect you guys? Do you know how many there are? Anybody take a guess? How many? Six attorneys. I think Circle K has more attorneys than that. So, and this is your biggest problem yet. Nobody's investigating why this is going on. Now, if you need somebody like me to investigate why it's really going on, I'll help you out. I actually have an article I'm working on. Is it possible Mexico attacks the United States? All right. So it's kind of, it's like a 100-page article, so you can get a hold of it. All right, thanks.
Okay, we're becoming very pressed for time, so let's see if we can limit our answers as quickly as possible, and I know the difficulty of that. Still for the House of Representative candidates, the question on the war in Iraq and the war on terror. Polls have suggested that Americans are becoming increasingly disillusioned about a positive outcome in our with our involvement in Iraq and uncertain of progress in the larger war on terror. Without rehashing whether we should have gone into Iraq or not, accepting the fact that we are there now, as congressman, what is your position and program to achieve a positive outcome in Iraq and the war on terror?
There was a question on the war on terror that we're not seeming to make that kind of progress that we'd like. But what do you think?
War on terror. It all starts with us. Do we really want to know? Because we never search for the answers. I've asked a lot of people all kinds of questions. They said, I don't got time for that. So, until you guys really want to know what's going on with the war on terror, obviously there are people out there trying to kill us. There's a lot of people that I know personally that died over in the South Bay. Real. And the U.S. attorneys are not doing anything about it. We've asked for help. Nobody's helping us. So the war out there for my life has existed for a good 20 years now. It's tough for me to approach a lot of you people all the time because obviously I have personal experiences here on the soil of the United States, not overseas, not somewhere else. So basically it comes down to, do we really, really care? Obviously we have problems because we have a lot of people in office who don't care. They're just taking the money and running. Alright, so, you know, the thing is find somebody who has a passion. Passion is everything in government. I think J.D. has a lot of passion. You gotta direct him in the right direction. You guys have to write him and tell him, hey, you're out of line. you know, get back in line and do this, this, and that. Do you write them? How many people actually wrote a congressman this year? All right, that's pretty good. You're pretty active. But since you guys are really active, then it's not good enough. All those things should have went up. All right, show your kids how to write a congressman. All right, you have to get active. You have to do more. Now, hearing guys' speech is one thing. The other thing is acting on it. Now, I gave you a lot of information. Share it with me. There's a lot of copies floating around. Share it. There's a lot of information in there. Okay, a lot of websites I included in there. So you guys can educate yourself. Work at it. Act. Thank you.
Well, I think you heard some about news on Iraq earlier. Let me summarize really quickly. Declare victory, redirect the military to a plan to exit Iraq with the fewest additional incremental casualties, and get done with it. But let me just take one second more to say that the ongoing war on terror outside the war in Iraq is something we really need to be concerned about, what the real motives are behind that. We have lost a tremendous amount of civil liberty, Patriot Act, warrantless spying, and the list goes on and on and on. And it looks like there's no end to the administration's continuing grab for power in that regard. All in the name of a war on terror. Enough.
Thank you. In respect to Iraq, one of the things I think is the problem, main problem in Iraq is mismanagement and incompetence. It's certainly not with the effort that our troops have done in Iraq. It's just plain mismanagement and incompetence. The first thing we need to do is to develop a plan. We have no exit strategy on what we, how we can determine when there's victory. None whatsoever. We need, I believe, to establish a bipartisan way to develop benchmarks, working with Congress, working with the President, the military, and the elected officials in Iraq, and establish benchmarks, not based on time, but achievement. Stay the course is not a plan. It's nothing more than a slogan. And I believe that we've got to do more. We've got to establish a plan. I can't imagine that we're in the middle of a football season now, that a football game would enter the fourth quarter without a game plan. That's exactly what we have now. And I think the responsibility of Congress is one of oversight, one that should hold the President accountable, and have him come up with a plan. In terms of terrorism, let me just say that I don't believe that we have fought this war on terrorism, but I don't know if we're any safer now than we were before. The border is less secure. The ports are less secure. Osama bin Laden, one of the reasons we went to war, is still loose. The 9/11 Commission recommended 41 recommendations on how to deal in the future with terrorism. 41 recommendations. Only in 28 of them received a failing grade. 28 received a failing grade. I believe Congress hasn't done its job and hasn't done the work that it should in implementing those. In fact, I understand last week the GED voted against the 9/11 recommendations, implementing the 9/11 recommendations, which I think is one of the first steps we should do in order to bring about or to fight this war on terrorism.
With all due respect, offering an analogy on the brutal business of war, comparing it to a game, is completely inappropriate. The bottom line is this. There are two incredible rules of warfare, and this should weigh heavily on the mind of every American, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, Vegetarian. There are two immutable rules of warfare. Rule number one, in war, fine young people die. And rule number two, there is absolutely nothing you can do to change rule number one unless you decide to quit. And then you buy yourself a lot more problems. Now, rather than mischaracterize my opponent's record, let me start with something I believe was good. Symbolic but important. My opponent extolled the virtues of a monument for those Arizona veterans who fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Could you imagine the same mass media mindset in the 1940s in the wake of the Battle of the Bulge that we have right now? I could almost hear what would be transpiring. Well, this is a serious setback for the war in Europe, but of course, that's the wrong war. We were attacked December 7th by the Japanese. What are we doing fighting Hitler's Germany? Oh, they claim he declared war on us December 11th, 4 days after the Japanese attack. But it's the wrong war. Make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen. The war against Islamofascism, a more accurate description than merely the war on terror, has Iraq as its central front. And you need not take my word for it. Take the word of our enemies. A very unlikely source. 2 years ago, the New York Times printed the article. The interception of communications between al-Zarqawi, who has now been sent to his reward, and al-Zawahiri, reported to be the number two man in al-Qaeda. What did they outline in those documents? This is what they outlined in those documents. The fact that they believed Iraq was vitally important to their plans to establish a modern-day worldwide caliphate. And also understand clearly what else was on their minds. Because they knew of the inevitable frustrations a free people would experience, they absolutely yearned for the invocation of a Vietnam syndrome so we could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. We dare not do that. If we learn nothing else on 9/11, losing 3,000 of our fellow countrymen when we were brutally attacked, we should have learned this lesson. All the wishing and the hoping in the world will not make the problem go away. The American people, slow to anger, have been aroused. The way to prosecute this war is not on a criminal justice stage, but dealing with deliberate acts of terror, in fact, as acts of war, that should be dealt with in full retaliatory actions to protect the American people. Victory. No ifs, ands, or buts. Thank you.
They've been waiting so patiently, our senatorial candidates. Thank you very much for that. We'll begin with first question on medical ethics. Advancements in biotechnology coupled with genetic breakthroughs have propelled us to a new frontier full of promise and hope for longevity and health. However, this brave new world has also raised serious ethical questions that we now are debating. As members of a religious community, we are concerned about these ethical questions and we look to our political leaders to offer ideas which address these issues. The question is this: what role do you believe the state or the Congress should play in bioethics? Where do you stand on issues such as stem cell research, whether embryonic or adult? And what limits and restrictions on abortions do you favor?
Sure. That's
we all decided that it's really about time to go. And if you want to know about stem cell research and our views there, look at our websites or other views that are just come and talk to us.
We'll be around. Thank you. So,
before you guys all leave, I just wanted to say a word. Seeing this forum come to fruition has been very, very gratifying to me. I'm so pleased that all the candidates came, and a great turnout of audience. Andrew Kulowski was a marvelous moderator, and Jane Powell, who did the card collecting, which we never did get to. But thank you all for coming, and this has been a very successful event.
Thank you. that every day.